chants of Bernie growing louder in Texas, what the caucuses in Nevada add up to for the Lone Star State, that story and a whole lot more today on the Texas Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio, with support from Rand Group. Software delivered as promised. No surprises.
I'm David Brown. This week, we're looking at the top line issues approaching November. Today, how much is healthcare going to move the body politic? We'll take a closer look. Also, who's afraid of the big bad license plate camera? More communities having that conversation. And the Matador leaves the ring in what could be the end of an era in South Texas. All those stories and then some on the national news show of You Know Where, and it all gets started right after this. No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard Time on this Monday, the 24th day of February, 2020. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us. At some point in the not-too-distant future, some clever person will decide to write a book about the transformation of American politics in the early 21st century. Problem is, things are changing so rapidly, it's hard to know just where to start. Let me give you an example. I went away Thursday night, didn't really have access to any news until around midday Sunday, and I was driving back home, trying to get myself caught up. That's when I heard this. It sounded like a Trump rally, only that's not Donald Trump they're chanting. And wait, this is happening in Texas?
You know, based on what I have seen today in Texas, we were in El Paso, we're here now. Don't tell anybody. I don't want to get them nervous. We are going to win the Democratic primary in Texas. And you know, this is also important. The president gets very, very upset easily. So don't tell him that we're going to beat him here in Texas.
Yes, that's Bernie Sanders, the proud to be a Democratic socialist in Texas, no less. To be fair, you can just conclude so much from the excitement of a political rally, right? I mean, don't forget, the Vermont senators' rallies in Texas were pretty noisy and well-attended affairs back in 2016, too. But consider this for a moment. Bernie Sanders has got what every single Democratic presidential contender was aiming to have by this time in the race when they started their campaigns many months ago. That thing is the big Mo. Momentum. Iowa, New Hampshire, now Nevada. As the Bernie train steamed across Texas over the weekend en route to Super Tuesday, those other candidates have got to be asking themselves, what's more powerful than a locomotive? Gormer Jeffers joins us. He's political writer for the Dallas Morning News, and he's been following all this, most recently from Nevada. In fact, Gormer, welcome back to Texas, and welcome back to The Standard.
Thank you. It's great to be back, David. And you're absolutely right. I mean, could you predict that we would be here months ago? But here we are.
Yeah. I mean, I think just like a month and a half ago, everyone was talking about Biden being the clear front runner among the Democrats in the Lone Star State. So what do you think is happening? Is this part of a sort of a national consensus building around one candidate? Or is this a lot of media sound and fury signifying what in Texas?
Well, it's a couple of things. It's one, give Bernie Sanders credit. He has developed this movement. He calls it a revolution. But he has, much like Donald Trump did in 2016, he has locked away some solid support that his rivals can't penetrate. And so he goes into these contests with, you know, a certain percentage of the vote already locked in, the progressive vote, the people who want change. And, you know, the rest of the moderates, so to speak, are dividing up the other part of it. And so he's winning these caucuses and primaries and the popular vote in every contest that we've had. And you look at Nevada, David, my goodness. I mean, he just got votes from a cross-section of demographics, whites, African-Americans, Pacific Islanders, mm-hmm. Latinos, mm-hmm. young, old.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people were sort of, they were just really surprised that Nevada, which is a Western state and maybe more in line with, at least in terms of political psychology, in line with Arizona than California, now seeming to make a kind of shift, which I think raises a larger question. And you address this. What we're seeing with Sanders and President Trump may be about a kind of reshaping of both parties, maybe, if not a political realignment, a way in which leaves moderates where exactly, Gromer?
Well, it leaves them with a choice to make. And that choice is how to rally or whether to rally around one champion, one candidate. Because I don't think going forward, going into Super Tuesday and beyond, that you can continue to divide up the pie and still be in a position to stop Bernie Sanders. If you look at Super Tuesday coming up in Texas and mm-hmm. California mm-hmm. and other states, I mean, you have Michael Bloomberg, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren will likely still be around, Klobuchar, others. How do you, I mean, do you see a consensus there of the moderate vote? Maybe Biden does well in Texas, mm-hmm. the polls show. But Bernie's, he's sitting there. You know he's going to get a certain percentage, a high percentage. So they're going to have to figure out, okay, I can't do this. I can't win. Maybe I should get out and let's see if we can, you know, try to stop this guy. If not, you know, you're looking at a Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders matchup, which I think is really, really fascinating.
Well, we're going to learn a whole lot more come Super Tuesday, which is March 3rd, and Texans are into their second week of early voting already. Right. Gromer Jeffers is continuing to cover this for the Dallas Morning News. We're going to have a link to his latest over at texasstandard.org. Gromer, good to hear from you. Thank you, sir.
Good to hear from you, and we'll see how this unfolds.
This week, we at the Texas Standard are taking some time to try to examine what issues might influence what Texans do at the polls this year, specifically what voters are thinking now versus back in 2016. Today, we're homing in on health care. Texas continues to opt out of the expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, a joint state and federally funded health care program for low-income and disabled Americans. There's also the issue of rural hospital closures and addressing the state's high maternal mortality rate, among other things. This is a big topic, but here to help us break things down is the University of Texas at Arlington's Chair of Political Science, Rebecca Dean. Professor Dean, welcome back to the Texas Standard.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
It seems like healthcare has been a major campaign talking point going all the way back to, I guess, the 2008 election season, really, at least. Where do you think it ranks, though, when it compares to other issues that Texans are juggling right now?
I think it's got to be at the top of the list, not only in terms of folks who don't have coverage, but even the folks who do, the cost of healthcare.
Well, let's begin with the state's decision not to adopt Medicaid expansion. Texas is one of the few states not to do that. What influence do you think that might have on the state's electorate in 2020?
So if we're talking about the Democratic primary, I think it energizes a lot of those voters. Democrats across the country are very frustrated with Republican legislatures that opted out of the Medicaid expansion. And I think that that's one of the things that energizes Texas Democrats. I think that you see that in terms of Senator Sanders' lead over the rest of the field in Texas. And I think that that's in large part due to his focus on health care.
Do you think that this is an issue that just Republicans don't have an interest in?
No, I don't think so at all. I think it's a matter of how you think about the issue, how you frame the issue. So for Republicans, they see it as problematic in two ways. One, that it's an expansion of government programs about which they're very skeptical. And two, they come back to cost and they worry about leading into an unfunded mandate. So the federal government says, yes, we will pay these subsidies, we will help states out. But what happens when that money dries out? The states then will be on the hook for it.
Here's the thing. This issue has been around with us for some time now. So I'm wondering, is it higher on the agenda? And if so, for what reason?
So I think it's not so much that it's higher on the agenda. It's been around since Senator Obama ran in 2008. Mm-hmm. I think what's changed is that the conversation around solutions has shifted more toward the left. So when President Obama was talking about change in the healthcare system, there was no way in the world he could go to a single payer. That just was a non-starter in the Senate. And if you look at, with the exception of sort of the moderate lane, if you look at Senators Sanders and Warren, mm-hmm. Both of them are talking about versions of single payer. Senator Sanders thinks we can get there in one fell swoop. Senator Warren wants to do it incrementally, but both would have that by the end of their first term. So it's not so much, I think, that the priority has changed, but that the range of acceptable options that people are even willing to talk about and become part of the public discussion and public discourse, I think that's expanded.
President Trump hasn't been entirely absent from this debate over healthcare. I mean, he has talked about doing things to rein in prescription drug prices, for example. What I'm curious about is whether or not come November, how this might actually shake out, if this is purely a Democratic issue, or if, in fact, we might see healthcare policies become a major point in those final rounds of debates between Republicans and Democrats.
Oh, I think you will, especially if either Senator Sanders or Senator Warren becomes the nominee. That puts healthcare front and center. And the president has made lowering the cost of healthcare something that he returns to over and over in his campaigning. And I would expect that to continue into the general election.
Rebecca Dean is chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Texas at Arlington. Professor, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out to talk with us on the Texas Standard.
You're so very welcome.
Well, let's find out what Texans are talking about on social media. Here's our social media editor, Wells Dunbar.
Hi, David. Hello. We're taking the pulse of our friends and listeners on healthcare as an issue this election season. Costs coming up quite a bit as a complaint. No big surprise there. On our Facebook page, Tim Wallace decries price gouging and letting insurance companies deny qualified prescriptions. Rob Eads also protests unregulated and unwarranted price hikes on life-saving drugs like insulin and EpiPens. And Larry Richards writes, my local urgent care clinic had to reclassify as an emergency room in order to keep ambulance services available. Being the only large clinic within 40 miles, we're now subject to ER prices. Rural communities most especially would be helped by simply expanding Medicare, Larry writes, or even a Medicare for All system. While speaking of Medicare for All online, we're also watching reactions to Bernie Sanders' trek across Texas over the weekend and other stories sparking reaction on social media. I'll be back with that later in the show.
You know he will, so what are you waiting for? Reach out to us on your social media platform of choice. Just look for Texas Standard, because Wells Dunbar, he's a-looking for you, and he'll be back in about 35 minutes or so here on The Standard.
Support for Texas Standard comes from White Mountain Bulgarian Yogurt, family-owned and operated in Austin, Texas for 40 years. Learn about the value of eating traditional Bulgarian yogurt at whitemountainfoods.com. Available in the dairy aisle. Support comes from Texas Children's Hospital, focused on outcomes and care, and providing treatment to kids in the Lone Star State and beyond for more than 60 years. Texas Children's Hospital, personalized care for every child. More at texaschildrens.org.
This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. In an effort to reduce crime, more and more Texas communities are using cameras that can read license plates. What's not to like? A lot, if you listen to critics, and Houston Public Media's Florian Martin has been getting an earful from both sides.
The Memorial Villages Police Department covers three small cities, Piney Point, Bunker Hill, and Hunters Creek Village. They are entirely surrounded by the city of Houston, just south of the Katy Freeway and east of Beltway 8.
There's only 27 ways in and out of the villages.
Chief Ray Schultz heads the small police department, which is 40 officers strong. He says most crimes that happen here, which aren't too many to begin with, are done by outsiders.
Majority of the time when those people come into the villages are coming via motor vehicle.
That's why his department has installed 20 automated license plate readers by the company Flock Safety at different spots throughout the community. The cameras record the back of every car that passes.
If we can capture the license plate of who the criminals are, maybe we can use that lead to help identify who committed the crime.
And so far, it's paid off. Since the police department adopted the technology in September, officers have recovered 28 stolen vehicles. Before that, Schultz says they typically caught one car thief a year. He says the cameras also helped them solve many other crimes that they otherwise might not have, including ID theft, robbery, and fraud. More than 25 communities in Greater Houston now use Flock Safety's license plate readers. The city of Katy just adopted them last month. Sugarland has used the technology for over a decade. Garrett Langley is the founder and CEO of Flock Safety. He says they don't even have to pitch their product anymore.
So it's all through word of mouth. The only reason why Katy is now a customer is because Memorial Villages was a customer. The only reason why Memorial Villages is a customer is because Jersey Village was a customer.
But is it costing innocent drivers their privacy?
This is a level of surveillance that, you know, frankly, has usually been associated with totalitarian regimes and not a free society.
Kevin Welch is with the Electronic Frontier Foundation in Austin. He says these cameras effectively turn everyone who drives by them into a suspect.
People talk about you don't have an expectation of privacy in public, but it's very different from thinking that I'm not necessarily private in public and there being a permanent researchable record of every single human being who went by a particular location.
Chief Schultz says nobody is being tracked. The computer only alerts officers when a license plate matches one that's been entered into the system as stolen or otherwise suspicious. And unless it's part of an investigation, the information is deleted after 90 days.
If a detective needs to do a review, it audits that, so I know that detective such and such did a search for this particular license plate on this day and this time.
Schultz says officers need a specific reason for looking up license plates in the system. But Welch is not convinced. He says basically we're expected to simply trust that police will use the technology only as intended.
If police departments want to use this technology, they need to come to us with proposals for how we can, you know, actually audit them and know that they're not abusing their access to these data sets.
Langley, the Flock Safety CEO, acknowledges that the use of the technology relies on people's trust.
That is one of the challenges of, I guess, any relationship, which is there an implicit amount of trust that you're comfortable with?
For now, the technology seems to be on a roll. Memorial City Mall is the latest Houston area location that'll be using license plate readers. In Houston, I'm Florian Martin for the Texas Standard.
Support for coverage of business comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping companies protect their drivers on the road. More at worksafetexas.com/onthejob.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. It's been almost 3 months since an explosion at a chemical plant in Port Neches, Texas. The blast didn't result in any fatalities, but it did cause widespread evacuations over the Thanksgiving holiday and serious damage to nearby homes and businesses, too. Well, now the state is suing the owner of that plant in a move some might find surprising, given the state's official stand against using big fines to win compliance. Kia Collier is a reporter and associate editor for the Texas Tribune. Kia, welcome back to the Standard.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has brought this suit on behalf of the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ. First, let's talk about what the company is and what TCEQ is claiming to have discovered.
Sure. So TPC Group is a Houston-based company. They're a top producer of 1,3-butadiene and other highly flammable chemicals. And I found through my reporting that they, you know, have a history of environmental violations. Environmental and watchdog groups, you know, call them kind of a bad actor or, you know, just kind of a repeat offender. And the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality has... I guess found that, you know, they're at fault for the incident that occurred on November 27th and then lasted for a really long time. Uh-huh. They're actually still, you know, responding to it.
And just to be clear, this group, this TPC group, has not been without previous violations, right? They've been cited before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, by both the EPA, you know, the Environmental Protection Agency at the federal level, and then also by TCEQ as well.
And yet what's notable here is that the state of Texas is suing for environmental regulations, whereas I think a lot of people think of the state of Texas suing the federal government to roll back environmental regulations. So yeah. What exactly is going on here, and why has this risen to such a level?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a departure from how the state has acted in the past. And it appears that they're, you know, moving to become more, you know, crack down more on industrial accidents like this. There have been a string of these, you know, explosions and other incidents, mm-hmm. Particularly in the Houston Upper Gulf Coast region in the last year or two. And yeah, Ken Paxton has started moving swiftly to sue over these incidents. And he's chosen to kind of trumpet some of those suits and then also not trumpet other suits, which is interesting. This lawsuit was announced very late on Friday, which is in the journalism world kind of a, you know, they don't want attention on this sort of timing.
Well, now let me ask you first, what are people who follow environmental regulatory action? What are those groups having to say about this move? Do they like it, I would imagine?
They like it. They're overjoyed that the state is starting to crack down, but they're also suspicious as well. There's been a concerted effort in the last couple of years by state legislators to crack down on or kind of preempt the power of local environmental prosecutors, particularly in Harris County, which has a historically very aggressive environmental prosecution unit. Mm-hmm. And so knowing that, they're wondering if the state is doing this so that they can have more control over these settlements and how much they might be, and work more directly with companies mm-hmm. To reach an outcome that, you know, is okay by them.
Just a couple of seconds left here, but how has TPC Group responded to this?
They sent me a, you know, kind of generic statement saying they've seen the lawsuit. They're working to still bring the incident to an end and protect the environment and human health. So we'll see, I guess, what they say in court filings.
Kia Collier covers the environment and energy for the Texas Tribune. We'll link to her latest at texasstandard.org. Kia, thanks.
Thanks so much.
Support for Texas Standard comes from TCU, where horned frogs strive to be responsible world citizens. More on how a trip to Norway challenged students' perspectives on mass incarceration and justice at tcu.edu/stories. Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas ABLE program, helping eligible Texans with disabilities save and plan for the future to pay for qualified disability expenses with a tax-advantaged ABLE account. Learn more at texasable.org.
From the Texas Newsroom, I'm Joseph Leahy. The second week of early voting is underway in Texas. As Houston Public Media's Sasha Cordner reports, it's also the last week Texans can vote before Super Tuesday.
During the early voting period, people can cast ballots at any polling location in their county of residence, and Texans can also vote by mail as long as they applied for a ballot by last Friday, and the early voting clerk in your county received it that day by mail, email, or facts. The last day of in-person early voting statewide is this Friday, February 28th. Election day for the 2020 primaries is March 3rd.
Sasha Cordner reporting. Days after Bernie Sanders drew thousands to four rallies in Texas, fellow Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren plans to visit the state. She'll hold a town hall Thursday with Julian Castro in San Antonio. The former housing secretary voices a new campaign ad for the Massachusetts senator.
Elizabeth Warren is a fighter, driven by a deep respect for working people because she came from a family that struggled.
Former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg is campaigning in Fort Worth and Houston this week. Researchers expect teenagers across the country to lose access to contraception as new changes are made to Title 10, the only federal grant program exclusively dedicated to funding family planning services. A new paper published in the Journal of Adolescent Health looks at Texas as a case study. It's one of 24 states that do not explicitly allow minors to consent to contraception, and in 2011, 7 state lawmakers reduced the family planning budget by 2/3 and reorganized Title X funding. The only way teenagers can get confidential access to contraception services in Texas is if they have Medicaid or receive services through a Title X clinic. Kate Coleman-Minahan worked on the study. She's a professor at the University of Colorado and a co-investigator with the Texas Policy Evaluation Project. She says they surveyed 47 organizations that received Title X funds before the Texas legislature's cuts.
79% of the organizations lost Title X funding at some point during the study period. These organizations frequently reported a decrease in their teen clients, and they attributed this decrease to their inability to provide confidential services that had been previously guaranteed under Title X.
The study was conducted between 2012 and 2015. Texas factory activity has picked up speed this month, according to the latest business survey from the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Its production index, which measures state manufacturing conditions, rose 6 points since late January to 16.4. Any sum above zero indicates growth. The survey shows most Texas manufacturing and service companies are looking to hire new employees, but 80% reported having trouble finding qualified workers. I'm Joseph Lakey.
33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. Last year, the Trump administration initiated a rule change, formerly known as the Migrant Protection Protocols, or the MPP. Less formally, it became known as the Remain in Mexico policy. What it means is that those seeking asylum in the U.S. are sent back to Mexico to await their hearings. Those with health issues are supposed to be exempt from being sent back. But Texas Public Radio's Rinaldo Leaños Jr. reports that in many cases, that's not happening.
Charlene DeCruz pulls out 30 cents out of her pocket and asks her clients if they need it for a turnstile at the Gateway International Bridge that connects Brownsville to Matamoros. She's done this many times. She's a U.S. immigration attorney. Today, she's trying to get her clients into the U.S.
I'm presenting, once again, families of who have children who have special needs and disabilities. We had yesterday 3 families, 2 with children with autism spectrum disorder, and one who a little girl with lissencephaly, who also is developmentally disabled.
Lissencephaly is a brain disorder with a life expectancy of 10 years. The little girl is 7.
And we're back on the bridge hoping that CBP will do the right thing and will take them out of MPP.
Guidelines for the Remain in Mexico policy say that people with known physical or mental health issues are exempt from the policy. But every time DeCruz brings sick asylum seekers to the bridge, they wait outside for hours and are almost always told to return to Mexico.
It's just ridiculous that we keep playing this game where you know that these folks don't belong in here. Why are you making me keep coming back?
The family stands single file behind DeCruz and Vidya Ramanathan, a pediatrician. Ramanathan says some of the children seeking asylum today are living at a tent encampment of more than 2,000 asylum seekers in Matamoros. When Ramanathan evaluated the children, they told her that living at the camp has caused them fear and anxiety, and in some cases, worsened seizure disorders.
The fact that they have disabilities means that being in those encampments puts them at high risk for further trauma and further medical conditions. And so I think that is why it's built into the MPP that they should be allowed into the United States.
DeCruz has been trying to get exemptions for these children so that they can receive medical care in the United States and wait there instead of in Mexico for their immigration court hearings. In January, DeCruz worked with a Cuban asylum seeker named Yodalis, who is a cancer survivor and has a medical condition in which a parasite is slowly making her blind. While in Matamoros, her condition worsened.
I couldn't cross the street. I couldn't see. I had to sit down and ask a kid for help who was about to cross the street.
Yodali says she's gone to the local hospital, but her condition is uncommon, and she wasn't able to get treatment. She says she left Cuba because she's being politically persecuted. Yodali's children are in the U.S. They left Cuba a few years before her. She says her biggest fear is that she'll never be able to see them again.
I've said, I have to get to my son. I have to get to know my grandson. I have to. I have to return to be able to touch my son, even if it's just to touch him and not be able to see him. All I ask is that I be able to see my son, my daughter, and my grandson.
Dee Cruz tried to get Eulalis out of MPP 5 times, and every time, CBP told her she must return to Mexico. But after being rejected the 5th time, Dee Cruz got a phone call from CBP. They told her to bring Eulalis back to the bridge. She was finally removed from the program and allowed to wait in the U.S. with family members as her asylum case unfolds in immigration court. Eulalis is one of the lucky ones. She has an attorney who is trying to help her get into the U.S. and get her exempt from MPP. Others living at the camp with similar health issues aren't so lucky. Back on the bridge, Dee Cruz and her clients with disabilities have now been waiting for about 2 hours. Then, a CBP officer returns with the decision.
Ms. Dee Cruz, the parole was considered, but it was denied. You're not going to be removed from the MPP program.
Okay, who made the decision?
No, that's what I'm...
Yeah, but was
I'm
it...
I'm not answering you.
CBP says they don't comment on specific cases. Dee Cruz explains to her clients that they'll have to return back to Mexico, but promises they'll try this again. Dee Cruz has learned from experience that the only way to get border officials to enforce their own policies on exemptions is to come back and ask, again and again. The next day, Dee Cruz tried crossing the families a 3rd time. They were told they must continue to wait in Mexico. I'm Reynaldo Leaños Jr. in Matamoros.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas CASA, advocating for a safe and positive future for all Texas children in the child protection system. Volunteer information at becomeacasa.org. Every child has a chance. It's you. Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Oncology, a statewide network of physicians treating more than 50,000 new cancer patients each year with technology and cancer-fighting care options. More at texasoncology.com.
This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. The line between sport and art has always been blurred when it comes to bullfighting. Sometimes called the ballet of death, matadors, like professional dancers, need strength, charisma, and talent to master a skill spanning centuries. But along the border, a variation of that sport has connected two cultures for decades. What's known as the ballet of life, bloodless bullfighting. Now the tradition and an era may be drawing to a close. Texas Standard's Kristen Cabrera traveled to the Rio Grande Valley to witness the Despedida, a farewell fight.
I'm driving down Ranch Road 1017 in South Texas. It's about an hour away from the border, and there's not much to see but mesquite trees, brush, and the occasional roadrunner. But to my right, red and orange flags line the fence of a 65-acre ranch. It's the Santa Maria Bullring, the only place in Texas home to bloodless bullfighting. The audience is here not just to see the event, but to witness the despedida of retiring host, 83-year-old Fred Rank. That's him on the loudspeaker. He's raw, genuine, and unpolished as he speaks to the audience.
She's turning it up fast. Turning it easily.
Traditional bullfights in Spain and Mexico are illegal here. In those countries, the bull is killed, but in the U.S., it's different. The bull goes unharmed. Instead, the matador must grab a flower velcroed on the back hump of the bull. Its quick removal is a symbolic kill, and the fight is over. With these last events, Rank's Despedida is like a victory lap or a farewell tour.
So it was just patience. You know, I get ahead of myself at my age, and that's why I want to quit. That's why it's got to be over. You know, tired, legs hurt, you know. I mean, just want to go back there in the back and fish.
It's something Rank has been considering since the death of his son David in 2018. In his son's prime, the bullfighting world knew David as El Tejano, America's youngest matador de toros.
But I built it for David, and David's gone. So I need to sell it so I can sit out there and enjoy it
Rank has invited old friends from this era and their children, now matadors themselves, back to the Valley to take part in these events. One of those friends is seasoned bullfighter of 60 years, Jim Verner. In the cantina Rank built beside the ring, Verner stands among countless photos of matadors, bullfights, and memories.
I'm 77 years old, so it's time I quit. And so I told Fred, I've been with you 20 years. I need to do the despedida here, too.
For Rank, it took a bit of luck and prayer to prepare for this special day.
You know, and I've always been lucky like that. And then today, to have the weather that we had. I went down to the San Isidro Catholic Church, and I lit every candle that was in the place.
And the animals could not have been more perfect.
The bulls were muy, muy bravo and muy difícil. Very, very hard to fight.
Yet, Verner knows things can go wrong with one false step. He recalls a moment years ago when a bull caught him and tossed him up in the air.
And when I landed, I made a mistake. It was my mistake. I got up with my back to the bull.
You should never lose sight of the bull. He was hit from behind, knocked out, and woke up in the hospital.
It was about half of my ear that was off, and so 15 stitches put my ear back on.
Despite the dangers, as he and Rank take their despedida, Verner knows it's all worth it.
La única cosa más difícil que torear es dejar de torear.
He says the full phrase in English.
Bullfighting is dangerous, beautiful, and difficult. The only thing more dangerous than bullfighting is the war. The only thing more beautiful than bullfighting is the love of a woman. But the only thing more difficult than bullfighting is to stop bullfighting.
Anyone walking into the ranch gets a sense of the struggle. This place is a museum dedicated to the sport and his family's legacy. Once it was even a school for young toreros hoping to become bullfighters. But those days are gone, faded in time much like these surrounding photos. Still, Rank knows when to take a win.
The day was a phenomenal day. It really was, you know. I got so much accomplished because all these people show up and realize I'm not going to be here anymore. I'm not going to do it.
My name is Stanley Tyler.
Judy Lyric.
Eduardo Barrera.
Lupita Barrera.
Adrian Lozano.
Dale Schutte.
Ken Curley.
Lila Hillen.
Randy Hillen.
Dallas Seaman.
My name is Annabelle Garcia.
We've been coming out here for over 10 years.
This is my third time.
Well, it's my first time here.
First time. We wanted to knock it off the bucket list.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It's something that's in our culture, but we don't get to see it here very often.
It's a Texas thing. It's a South Texas thing. It's a Mexico thing. And it all comes together.
I loved it. It was exciting and fun. And it's like a ballet, like a dance with the bull. And I think that's so beautiful.
And the place has history, because you just look around, you know it has history.
I really wish that my first time wasn't going to be a time where he's going to retire.
And I would like people to still continue the tradition as well.
I just wonder where the next generation will pick up and carry the torch.
It's a shame they're not going to be doing it much more. I'm really sorry to hear that.
For my last trip, this was a good one.
27-year-old Carla Santoyo is a world-renowned matador de toros and one of the few women currently in the sport. She's known Rank for decades, and for his era to be coming to a close, it's bittersweet.
Me quedé pensando, la gente.
For her, she says it's about the people. They like everything, like the colorful suit she wears, because it's new to them. And she says she enjoys sharing this part of her life with people who aren't familiar with it.
Entonces me emociona poder compartir algo que es mi vida con la gente que no lo conoce.
Rank calls it getting bit by the worm, and it's kept him going his whole life.
Like the gusano of the bullfight that eats on you and never lets you leave it.
We want to thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for coming.
The sun starts to set on the Santa Maria bull ring. The crowd heads towards their cars. Rank is relieved to have gotten through the day.
I thank all of you for coming. It means so much.
In his home, just feet away from the bull ring, he sits inside a small room which, not surprisingly, is covered in bullfighting posters.
I got that from a guy who owned a restaurant. Took it off the wall.
It's hard for him, living among these memories, friends, Matador memorabilia spanning a lifetime, his lifetime.
You look up and they're all gone. All my friends are gone, all my compadres are gone. But hell, man, I want to join them, you know, up there. I'm ready.
But tonight, sitting around a poker table in the den of his house, the cantina just steps away. Rank is surrounded by his compadres that are still around. With song and drink, they're celebrating a good day and the man who made it all possible. Rank's playing the guitar and he's singing. I have to leave. As I drive away for the night, the party is still going. Friends, matadors, and Fred Rank, father of bloodless bullfighting at the Santa Maria Bullring. For the Texas Standard, I'm Kristen Cabrera.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas College Savings Plan, administered by the state of Texas. Families can save for tuition, room and board, books, and other qualified education expenses at eligible schools nationwide. Learn more at texascollegesavings.com.
This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. Some good news: the spread of the coronavirus appears to be slowing in China. Now some bad. New hotspots are emerging from Italy to Iran to South Korea, where 800 cases have now been confirmed. U.S. officials report 34 cases here. Doctors say they're doing all they can to prevent an outbreak. In San Antonio, Americans are under quarantine at Lackland Air Force Base after being evacuated from a cruise ship off Japan. On Friday, officials confirmed 2 new cases among those evacuees. But here's the thing. There's the virus, and then there's the fear that often spreads like one. And as serious as this medical crisis is, KERA's mental health reporter Saida Hassan reminds us that we have a tendency to downplay dangers far more common.
Dr. Philip Wong knows North Texans are worried about the potential spread of COVID-19. That's the respiratory illness caused by the novel coronavirus.
And I think that that's, you know, a lot of what causes the anxiety. This is new. It's unknown. You know, we're saying all along that we still don't know all the, you know, the severity, how easily it's transmitted. You know, new things sometimes can be a little more scary.
But as the director of Dallas County Health and Human Services, Wong maintains the disease poses a low risk. He says local leaders are following the proper protocols for prevention. Dallas-Fort Worth Airport is screening travelers for the coronavirus, and Wong's department is trying to squelch rumors. Because the new coronavirus emerged in Wuhan, China, some have spread misinformation that people of Asian descent are more susceptible. That's just not true.
Just being a particular race or ethnicity is not a risk factor for this, but it's actually having been in the affected areas or been exposed to someone who has the virus.
The disease is thought to spread mainly from person to person, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and most confirmed cases have been in China. Wong says he's seen misinformation spread about other foreign diseases. There was similar panic around the SARS epidemic, the bird flu, and Ebola. Wong thinks the outsized reaction stems from feelings of uncertainty and a lack of control. He also says pop culture depictions of mysterious new illnesses can contribute to those overblown fears.
Sometimes the movies portray these, you know, outbreaks of deadly viruses.
Just take the 2011 outbreak movie Contagion.
Don't talk to anyone. Don't touch anyone. Stay away from other people.
You know, but again, we need to keep in perspective what we know and know that the public health community are trying to do things to try to prevent this.
At the same time, Wong is reminding residents of another public health risk. Dallas County is in the middle of flu season, but it's hardly generating the same public anxiety. Psychologist Lynn Bufka is with the American Psychological Association.
For most people, their experience of the flu is they've had it or they've known someone who's had it. It's not been pleasant, but they've recovered and life goes on.
The CDC estimates at least 26 million Americans have gotten the flu this season. At least 14,000 have died. Because it's familiar, though, Bufka says there's less fear and uncertainty surrounding the flu. Most people can wrap their minds around it. Bufka has treated patients who deal with health anxiety. It can manifest as obsessive or irrational worrying about medical conditions. She says those feeling anxious about the coronavirus are probably anticipating the worst possible outcome.
And what we need to do in those situations is think through how likely is it? Is it really that realistic that I'm likely going to interact with the person with coronavirus, develop coronavirus, have a really bad case of coronavirus, and die? The likelihood is really, really, really small, but our fears magnify all that.
Bufka says people with health anxiety may go down internet rabbit holes to find answers and comfort themselves, but that can make things worse. A 2015 study found searching for health-related information online can increase anxiety, particularly for those already on edge. Bufka advises sticking to reliable sources of information, like the CDC. And she says if those internet deep dives make you more anxious, it's better to unplug. I'm Saida Hassan in Dallas.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Okay, he's back. Our social media editor, Wells Dunbar, that is. What are folks talking about on this Monday, Wells?
Well, David, Bernie Sanders waltzed across Texas over the weekend, hitting El Paso, San Antonio, Houston, and Austin, still engendering plenty of talk online. That trip across Texas coming fresh off that his win in the Nevada caucuses. Via Facebook, Tommy Schultz said he made it to one of the rallies and reports San Antonio was packed to capacity. Sanders supporter Matthew Kruby, he calls Sanders' candidacy the best in our lifetimes to overcome the corruption of our political system and create real change for good in the United States. But upon hearing of Sanders' promise of universal health care, child care, and more, Charles Robinson says, hold on to your wallets tight. So obviously some disagreement out there online and in person as to the merits of Sanders' candidacy, but going to be a heck of a thing here come Super Tuesday.
Yes,
right around the corner.
Well, I'm just really fascinated by something that Gromer Jeffers was talking about. Not a realignment so much like a la the 1960s where you had the Democrats and the Republicans sort of flipping sides in a sense, but sort of both sides really hitting hard on populist sentiments and let's take on the system writ large. It's absolutely going to be one of those stories.
Jeffers had that great thing, sort of comparing him with Trump, but not on the political merits, but on the sort of
the political
insurgent
style and approach. Yeah. Absolutely,
yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, new news in on Monday, at the age of 101, mathematician Katherine Johnson has died. Yes, portrayed in the hit film Hidden Figures, Johnson, one of several formerly unsung African American women who provided invaluable help behind the scenes of NASA's efforts reaching the moon. Johnson helped calculate the trajectory for 1969's Apollo 11 flight to the moon and the safe return of astronauts during the Apollo 13 moon mission. So definitely lots of remembrances pouring in online on social media for her today, and markedly deserved for all her work there. In other news, today is the day it all comes tumbling down. A demolition crew is slated to take down the so-called Leaning Tower of Dallas, something we've been following on this show, regular listeners or Dallas residents.
The building
that
just wouldn't come down.
They may remember, a controlled implosion about a week ago. Didn't quite go according to plan. This 11-story building near downtown Dallas was imploded, but that large interior column, including the elevator shaft, refused to budge, although it did tilt a little bit to the side there, creating the Metroplex's newest landmark. But as we speak, construction, or rather demolition crews at it, thwacking away at that thing with a wrecking ball.
A landmark, no matter how temporary, I suppose. But what a spectacle it was against the skyline.
They got a heck of a skyline there in Big D already,
Maybe they'll have to put up something more purposeful after all this. Who knows? I mean, that would be an interesting thing, a leaning tower. We have the Jenga Tower here in Austin.
Yeah,
you know about that, right?
It's true, yeah.
Listen, we're out of time for the big broadcast, but we're going to be back same time, same place tomorrow, and we hope you'll join us. Till then, I'm David Brown, along with Wells Dunbar and the rest of the Texas Standard crew, wishing you a marvelous Monday.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Rand Group, partnering with small and mid-sized companies by helping to unify their businesses and achieve digital transformation. More at randgroup.com. Software delivered as promised. No surprises. Philanthropic support for Texas Standard comes from Casey and Scott O'Hare, the Winkler Family Foundation, Lynn Dobson and Greg Woldridge, Adrian Killam, and the George Huntington Family.